Joining us now from TSN, you can check out his excellent work at tsn.ca, Travis Yost. And Travis, you've written about, and thank you for your time, about Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. And we've spent on this station, on this show, a lot of time talking about both. And you go into great detail about, you know, while both those players would certainly help someone with Stanley Cup dreams, it's nuanced, I think, to steal a word that's in your piece. Tell us about the challenges of trying to get one of those guys to your team.
Yeah, it's fascinating trade targets, both of them. I think for any number of reasons. Like, and I think most people understand what they're working with here. It's two still quality forwards, both 34 years old right now, both on expiring deals, both on no move clauses, so they can kind of dictate where they go. And even though their cap hit is massive, which does have a more dramatic effect in the cap-constrained environment that we live in right now, normally, even though they're a very expensive, maybe balance sheet rental, this is the type of player you go after if you are going to acquire a veteran that you think is going to improve your team, because worst-case scenario, your downside risk is pretty marginal, right? Like, it's not a player that you're going to be giving up significant assets for because the deal is expiring. You're likely not going to go maybe into a multi-year extension unless you're a team with that sort of cap space. So from a rental standpoint, it kind of does make sense for many teams. I think the interesting question is about performance. It's not so much about can certain teams make it work. One of the I think, fascinating parts of Chicago's just capitulation over the last 4 or 5 years, the team is dreadful, and Toews and Kane are still two of the best players on the active roster, and that hasn't changed. But if you look at Chicago's performance over the years, it's kind of been a macro problem, right? Their fourth liners get their teeth kicked in. Their third liners get their teeth kicked in. So do the second line. So does the first line. And I think a very interesting question to raise is, okay, we know Chicago's bad, and we know Chicago's rebuilding, and we know there's maybe not a lot of inspiration in the market to win right now, and we recognize and acknowledge all that. But how do you reconcile that with Toews not nearly looking the same dominant two-way player that we once knew him as, really, for the majority of his career? Jonathan Toews mostly gets shellacked in the defensive zone on a nightly basis nowadays. And Patrick Kane is another interesting animal, because a completely different player than the player of Toews' skill set. Still an elite scorer and still a major point producer, and I think could be a real weapon for teams attacking. But Kane has always been a defensive liability, even in his peak performance years. And if you look at what Chicago's doing defensively with Kane on the ice this year, if you think Toews' numbers are bad, Kane's numbers are near the bottom of the entire NHL. So I think the real test for a GM, it's kind of bifurcated, right? You've got to address the cap ramifications and what you'd be willing to part with in terms of assets. But the segue from what you'd be willing to part with is really a question of how good do I think one or both of these players still are? And I got to be honest, I think that's a very open question, especially considering many veterans around the league who are still producing at adequate rates in ways that we are not seeing from either of the stars, or maybe we should say ex-stars in Chicago now.
We are talking to you from a city that saw the Oilers pay a dear price for Duncan Keith. And I think that it's fair to say that Toews and Kane will probably cost more, even with their contracts, than some of us believe. I see Toews as being a better fit for a team like Edmonton. Kane is fascinating and intriguing, but, you know, the power play already runs really well here. And as you say, he's not going to really help you at 5-on-5, certainly without the puck. I do wonder if Toews going to Winnipeg, you know, he's from there, and they look to have a real shot. Is that a team that could house Toews successfully?
I think so. I think if you're a team, and this is the way you think about it is the way I think about it, which is if you're a team looking for some scoring firepower and maybe you've got the pedigree to insulate a player defensively, you go after Patrick Kane. And I'm just going to steal an example. I'm not saying they're in the mix or anything of that line, but a team like Boston, who, you know, famously years ago acquired Taylor Hall and brought him in, like, Kane can be insulated on that roster because they are so defensively dominant that the downside of Kane's play is going to be insulated, and you are going to get 25 or 30 goals from a player of Kane's skill set in his sleep, especially if you're going to put him on the first power play unit. To your point, Edmonton's power play is unstoppable. I think the Oilers are still the best team in the Western Conference. Maybe you debate a truly healthy Colorado team is still number one. And obviously Dallas has had a great year, but I look at the path for Edmonton and it's very clear to me. Kane, I don't think really adds much of anything, Patrick Kane, that is, in Edmonton. I think Taze is an interesting fit, but I do think there's another interesting wrinkle with this, which is Edmonton's secondary and tertiary players. We talked for a decade about how abysmal it's been and how they've done the organization's done a complete disservice to their star players. They've held up fairly well this year, I think. And I think, yes, does Taze improve your second or third line? Unequivocally. But it's a $10 million cap hit. You're going to have to part with something. And the question is, for Taves, does he really drive play in a meaningful and material way? Because he's not the premium scorer that you normally would acquire at the trade deadline. He's more of a polished defensive two-way player. He was Mark Stone before Mark Stone. He was Patrice Bergeron before Patrice Bergeron. But I don't think he's not that same guy. The question is, how much has he fallen off from that cliff, and is it worth the cost to pay? I got to be honest, I don't think either of these players are great fits in Edmonton right now. I would be looking maybe for blue line help if I'm the Oilers. But I think there's a clear path for the Oilers here. I would be very surprised if they're not buyers. I think they have a genuine argument for best or could be best team in the Western Conference if things play right.
I think the guy out of Chicago they should go after is Jake McCabe.
It's a little. You want to talk football so we can get this aligned? Because if there was a short list of players that make a lot of sense for the Oilers, Jake McCabe is absolutely on that list. Not only has McCabe played well in Chicago, he looked the part in Buffalo. And we talked about, well, how much are Taze and Cade actually contributing to Chicago's demise? Opposite end of the spectrum or question for McCabe. McCabe entered that Buffalo organization when they were utterly dreadful. And there were times when he was probably looking around his five-man lineup like, I'm 21 years old and I know I'm the best player and I'm not very good right now. And I think he's a very established diamond-in-the-rough type player who's kind of had his name or his reputational value held back a little bit because he's played on dreadful teams his entire career. I think without a shadow of a doubt, if Edmonton's looking for defensive help, he is near the top of the list.
Travis Yost joining us here from TSN.ca. Check out his piece check out all of his stuff. It's great. It's so detailed and really revealing. I heard what you said. We heard what you said about Boston. It doesn't leave a long list of teams that could, to use your term, insulate.
No, especially now in the current scoring environment where every team, except for like three, feels like they can score reasonably at will, but the other thing about Boston, too, if they can make the cap, like if I'm the Bruins here, I think the fascinating question for the Bruins is this the time to go all in? Because it kind of borrows a little bit from the Tom Brady-esque, how can this team be this good this long? I remember I looked at the offseason, if you looked at, the marquee franchises of the 2000s, San Jose, Pittsburgh, Boston, Chicago, Detroit. Four of the five have completely capitulated and are dreadful or are entering multi-year rebuilds, LA as well. Boston has been up, 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 up really for the past 20 years. And if you watch a Bruins game, maybe say for the last week where they hit a bit of a rough patch in Florida, I mean, they're just whitewashing teams. It took them like 3 months to lose a game on home ice. So, the other piece of this, of course, is Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, two of your three best players in the lineup right now, are really pushing towards the tail end of retirement. And if you're going to make another bid for the Stanley Cup, I get that the Eastern Conference, there's a talent imbalance, and the majority of, I think, quality teams are in the East right now. But maybe that's more gunpowder for Boston to really make an all-in move here, because I got to be honest, onesie, twosie losses aside, the Bruins have been wire-to-wire the best team in the league, and if you add another weapon on that lineup, they are going to be a brutal out. And thanks to Gary's awful playoff format, he can rest assured that one of Toronto or Tampa Bay will be out by round one. So Boston's path may be a little bit easier.
I saw you challenge Gary to a live debate on Zoom. I'm certain you checked down from like a mud wrestling match or something, but has he gotten back to you?
No, he's not. And they never get, Alan, I don't understand. This playoff format is so bad. It's so bad. I am committed to open live debates with anyone who thinks this current format is good in any way, up to and including Gary Bettman. I can't live with it. And what kills me too is, It's almost become a time honored tradition at this point. I've been at TSN 9 years, which is scary, but almost every single year, once a year, I write, hey, by the way, this is why the playoff format sucks. And usually it comes in January or February, and I consistently show, hey, look, the 2-3 forced matchup intra-division is breaking what the playoffs should be or intend to be. It's not yielding what the NHL thinks. And every year, so long as you have any sort of talent imbalance within the divisions or within the conference, you are going to get skew in the first round. And by the way, this is why the NHL, we've talked about this from a different perspective. I think the NHL first round is extraordinary. I think it might be the best of any of the major sports, including March Madness. The problem the NHL has is by the second round and the third round and the fourth round, you're starting to winnow teams out that maybe you didn't have an intention to do so because you're playing, you know, you got the fourth best team in the league playing the fifth best team in the league in the first round. And I do think that that has an upside down effect. Whereas in the NBA, you know, the other side of the coin, yeah, the first round can feel a bit of a churn. You got the eighth seed getting their teeth kicked in and blown out in a 4-game sweep. And no one wants that. But I'll tell you what, by the second and third and fourth round, you're getting best on best consistently. And I do think it's something the NHL seriously has to consider, and I'll keep saying this until they actually consider it.
You've sold me, Travis. Low Tide is sitting here just itching to talk NFL. I know he's just got something he's got to get off his chest. I can't imagine what it is.
Well, I'm not going to talk
my
about
phone.
The...
My phone. I'm losing service. I'm losing service.
Yeah.
I just want to know, like, I thought the Bills were going to be there, and they're not. What happened?
Not only did I think the Bills were going to be there. I mean, don't get me wrong. The road is tough out of the AFC. So there was always a likelihood they were going to lose to one of Cincinnati or Kansas City, and that is what happened. But yeah. I had talked myself truly by week four of like it's going to be Buffalo and Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and me and Alan are going to have a party, and Buffalo is going to be allowed to win this one because the Eagles, I remind everyone, have already won a Super Bowl in my lifetime. But that is not the case. And I got to be honest, like the one thing watching Philadelphia that I didn't see from Buffalo was fierceness and dominance in the trenches. Buffalo's offensive line and defensive line, I don't know which played softer between the two. And quite frankly, it was a bit of a common theme all year where the lines would get mauled, especially after the Von Miller injury. The defensive line was kind of ineffective on their best days. The offensive line, constant turnstile, and all that ended up creating was this every week it was like, yeah, Bills are talented. Josh, go figure some stuff out. And I got to be honest, like, I think the Bills are a little bit of a more flawed team at year end than maybe we thought at onset, especially on the lines. And I think Josh Allen's kind of getting a bit of I think he's wearing it a little more for the organization than he probably should have. I mean, if you watch the Bills game, he snaps the ball. There's three guys in the backfield, and it's like, all right, Josh, just break two tackles, stiff arm the DN, and get a ball downfield, and hit a guy with like a half a yard of separation. So I struggle with that piece, especially in contrast to your Eagles, because they look so well-rounded and so disciplined without any holes. And when you're a team without any holes, or at least have very few holes, it's hard for things to really downward spiral in a way they did in Buffalo. And by the way, like full marks to the Eagles, because that Niners team was insanely good. I get they didn't have a quarterback, but the Eagles were the best team in the NFC wire to wire, maybe the best team in the NFL. And I think they've got a shot to win it all here.
Well, you've made Al very happy.
Yes,
always,
very happy.
Always good to chat, Travis. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe next year will be my turn, but I've said that my entire life.
Yes. Duly noted, Travis Yost from TSN. .ca. We'll step aside here. We'll get to your text here. God, that was a good NFL route.
Like, he's so good. You know, man. Back in the old Saturday show days, he'd come on, and we'd talk like 10 minutes about the Oilers, and then we'd go to the NFL, and he's very passionate